What we're hearing today in many places, shamefully so, in pulpits, is philosophy, philosophical things. And the more philosophical you get, the more people you get, which kind of gives you the idea, I got no philosophy at all. But in that, the whole idea of philosophy is not what Paul's doing here. Paul is not doing what the Judaizers did. That's what they had. They had philosophy. And Judaizers had nothing except that. But in these few verses, Paul's not giving us philosophy. He's giving us instruction, which have power, the power of the Holy Spirit. They have purpose, that is the glory of God, and the pattern, which is Jesus Christ. So all moral philosophies, someone has said, are trains without engines. Well, this train has an engine, and we're going to see how it works here. First of all, he talks about marriage relationships. Marriage. Wives first. In fact, he does each of the, lesser things. He gives the lesser first and then the other one later. We'll see how it goes. But here, first he starts off with wives. The opposite, of course, is husband. That'll be the second one. What wives are to do, he says right there in verse 18, submit to your husbands. Did he say submit? Submit, yeah. Well, it's a military term, which means to rank yourself under. When I was in the Navy, an admiral was higher than I. Way higher than I am. Well, I didn't hate him for that. I was an apprentice seaman, the lowest you can get. But I had to rank myself under him. And they told us, don't go beyond the ranks. You don't go directly to the admiral. You go to the people up and go on up. You don't write to the president. You can get in jail for writing to the president. Rank. Find your rank and assume it. Well, wives, he says, submit to your husband in rank. That's your rank in the family. See, God doesn't intend for a wife to yield to a husband in things that abuse her or things that are contrary to God's will. Of course not. That rank, God ranks higher than even your husband. And then notice one more thing about wives' submission. That is to your own husbands. It's not to every other man. It's to your own husband at all. So that's what the wives are to do. But why are they to do that? Well, as it is fitting to the Lord. It's fitting. It's exactly what the Lord wants. That's what he has prescribed. He showed us that in the order of creation. The subjection rests on the divinely prescribed authority. And what does that mean? Well, it means what you've said and what you've heard all your life. Because I said so. Did you ever hear that? Did you ever use that? Yeah. Because I said so. Well, when God says, because I said so, he's saying, because I am says so. And that settles the whole thing. So God is saying, this is what you do. And there's no inherent inferiority involved. No inferiority in spirituality, in intelligence, in worth, in anything else. No inferiority is involved in this. It's the fitting thing. It's consistent with what God ordained in creation of the human race. In Genesis 2:18, he says, and the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. So Adam was there, no helper. In fact, it's interesting that I went back and read all this again. But it's interesting that before he said, gave Adam the helper, he showed Adam all the animals, and Adam named them. Talk about smarts. I can't name them myself right now. He named them all. And so that he did that. And then there's a little line in there that says, and there was no mate found for Adam. Do you think they were looking for a mate for Adam among those animals? Seems so. So God made an animal for him. God made a mate for him. Genesis 2:21, that was a really slip. The Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed it in, closed up flesh in its place. Now, Matthew Henry said this, woman was made out of the rib from the side of Adam, not from his head to rule over him, not from his feet to be trampled by him, but from his side to be equal with him, under his arm to be protected, under his heart to be loved. All of that is what's involved in all of this. And Paul summed it up this way. 1 Timothy 2:13. For Adam was formed first, and then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman, being deceived, fell into transgression. So, you say, well, Eve caused the fall. No, Eve didn't cause the fall. Adam caused the fall. Eve was first in the transgression. She gave it to her husband, and he ate. And that's when the race fell. 1 Corinthians 15:22 says, as in Adam, all died. The fall was Adam's fault. Now, don't get me into this idea of what would happen if Adam did not. What about his fall? Then don't get the idea that Adam had some kind of I love you so much, I'm going to eat of it too, so we'll be in the same place. No, none of that. He sinned. He went against what God said, and that's all there was to it, and the race fell because of him. But Eve was first in the transgression. So that's the order of creation. But then there's also the order of the Godhead. See, submission does not mean inferiority. We know that from 1 Corinthians 11:3 says this, but I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God, meaning God the Father. Wow. Is Christ submission under submission to the Father? Yes. Does that mean he's inferior? Not in any way. So, ipso facto, submission does not mean inferiority. Husbands, listen up. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Love your wives. Now, the Greek word here is, the verb is agapao, which means all give. The kind of love that gives all the time. It's giving, giving, giving. That's agapao. That's the kind of love he says. Give, give, give to your wife. It's not the phileo. Phileo is kind of give and take. Friendship kind of thing. Oh, give and take. That's one. Then there's one more, which is not used in the New Testament, but it's erao. We get our word erotic from that. It is all take. So this is all give. All give love to your wife. And then Ephesians 5, Paul says, love her as your own flesh. And then he says, no man ever yet hates his own flesh. And then he says also, love her as Christ loved the church. And then he gives an example. And he gave himself for her. Would you give yourself for your wife? Of course you would. That's the kind of love we're talking about. So loving here involves doing the very best for the one you love. And that's a common saying all through Christendom. And Ryrie goes one step farther. He says, it's desiring the will of God for the one you love. I like that better. That's a self-sacrificing. Sacrificing your own interests for her interests. That's what love is. That's what agapao love is. And then It's loving and behaving unselfishly. 1 Corinthians 13. Read that sometime with that in mind. You'll see it. So, love your wives, he says. Now, don't be bitter toward them. How do you bitter? Don't nag. Why? It's not, wives are not the only ones who nag. Don't nag your wife. Don't find fault. Don't be cross. Here's one. Be in private as you are in public. Think about it. Think about the way you act in public. Oh, my lovely wife, my love, my wife, we love you. Is that the way you act at home? I hope so. That's the way it ought to be. Don't be bitter. Be what you are. And be the right thing. Barclay says this. Both under Jewish and under Greek law and custom, all the privileges belong to the husband. All of the rules and duties belong to the wife. But in Christianity, for the first time, we have the ethic of mutual and reciprocal obligation. When Christianity came along, how deep into history were we? Probably at least 6,000 years, maybe longer. 6,000 years of history, and Christianity for the first time says there's a mutual obligation. Wow. And then people say, oh, Christians say wife has to submit to her husband. How awful is that? Forget that. Marriage, relationship. That's the way it is. Now, family relationship. Children and parents. Children. And this word children is it's apart from any age, except it's their children in the home, apparently. And, of course, it has nothing to do with sex. All children. What are they to do? They are to obey the parents in all things. I'm sorry, John. You're the only one I have to talk to. All the rest of these people, old people. In any case, obey your parents. And the word obey means to hear under. Listen to them as you're responsible to them. They're above you. Listen to them. Hear under. And your obedience ought to be unquestioned and instant. Children ought also to honor their parents, because obedience without honor brings frustration. Do both. Obey your parents, honor your parents in all things. Now, by all things, he doesn't mean that you ought to disobey God. If your parent wants you to disobey God, you have to obey God rather than men. Acts 4:19, 5, and Ephesians 6. So, this command then is to minor children, not to adults, not to married children. In Genesis 2:24, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. When a young man and woman are married, they are to each other. Parents, get out of the way. Let them come to you. Now, that's what they're to do. Now, why are they to do it? Well, because this is well-pleasing to God. It's well-pleasing to when you obey God. Now, it's interesting to me that to the wives, he says, when he argues for them to submit, he says, it's fitting, it's right, it's a proper thing to do. Because he expects the wives to understand that, the wives to see that and say, okay, it's the right thing to do, I'll do the right thing. But to children, he says, obey your parents, because that will please the Lord. Do you notice how children love to please? They love to please you. Melanie is in a place where the children don't always love to please you, at least not the teacher. And I say, oh, the children are so wonderful. Children are so nice. I love. And I'll see her kids, and I say, they are so sweet. Yeah, they don't always want to please. But I think that in the heart of a child, they want to please. And so he says to them, you'll please God if you obey your parents. So that's the difference between the two commands, I believe. Now, it's the command that pleases God. Because parents are under God. And even though you belong to God, you still have a responsibility to the parent who acts on God's behalf. Now, I'm doing this carefully because I think it's important. Children, obey your parents because the parents are responsible to God and they are in place of God. Now, you know that I was dean of students at a college, and in that, we had a thing about to the students, and loco parentis. What does that mean? It means we are your parents. In this location, we are your parents. And we tell you when to come in and when to get up and when to eat, that kind of thing. And that's exactly what we have with the, because we were speaking with the parents' permission. When the parents send them to the college, they say, all right, you have permission to tell them what to do in these areas. Well, that's true of parents with God. God gave the parents, the children, to you, and you parents are acting as God. Now, I went that way. I did all that to say this. I believe that the first five commandments are Godward. And I hear people say, oh, the first four are Godward, the next six are... No, it's five and five. That bothers me. If six and four, what's that? Five and five. Because the fifth commandment is, children, honor your father and your mother. And that is a God commandment through the parents. The parents are simply en loco parentis. We are, they're responsible to God, and you obey your parents because that pleases God, and that makes number five a God command. All first five are God commands. The six through ten are horizontal relationships. Just a little thing I throw at people, one of my heresies. Fathers, what they're to do. Children and fathers, and fathers really as parents. What parents are to do. Refrain from provoking your children. Now, provoking can be good or bad. And the first thing I did was run to Hebrews 10. Now, I looked at the Greek and it wasn't the same word, so I had to go somewhere else. It's only used one other time in the Bible, and that's 2 Corinthians 9:2. 2 Corinthians 9:2 says this, talking about the offering that Paul was taking for the Jerusalem children, Jerusalem famine. And he says, I know your willingness, talking to the Greeks down in the lower part of the peninsula. I know your willingness, about which I boast to you, the Macedonians, that Achaia, Greece, Corinth, was ready a year ago. And that has stirred up the majority. Now, the word stirred up there is provoke. That has provoked them to give. That's a good thing. But here, it's a bad thing. Don't provoke your children in a bad way. It has this negative connotation. How do you provoke your children? Well, by overprotection. By favoritism, by discouraging the child. You don't do anything right. Huh? Failure to make allowances for the child. I don't mean by money, but allowances, allowing for the child's difference. I grew up in a family of six children. We were all different. Some things were the same, but we all had different things. My father had one answer to everything. Switch. He would switch the whole bunch. And whether you were there or not, I didn't do anything. Okay, wait, no, get over here. All all three of you, the three older ones, would get the switch. You know? Same thing. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, understand the child. Make allowances for that child, for that particular way in which he exists, in which he responds to your discipline. And then physical cruelty, of course, goes beyond that. So that's what they're not to do. Refrain from provoking your children. Secondly, why they should do it or not do it. He says, lest the children become discouraged. Some provocation is necessary. You don't ask the child, shall I punish you or not? You provoke them in that sense. There's some there. But ceaseless irritation causes children to become discouraged, sullen, angry, hateful, all of that. So, on the other hand, praise for well-doing rather than constant criticism will bring them along with loving discipline and will rear up children in the training and the admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6:4. Remember this. Children are from the Lord. They are dedicated to the Lord. They should know that the parents are on their side. The parents are there for me. They want me. They love me. That ought to be there. There should be an example for them to follow. And there should be some creative discipline, not the same thing every time. Business relationships. Marriage, family, now business. Employees. Now, he talks about slaves. Don't have any slaves. But I think the same principles fit with employees and employers. He starts off first with employees. It's interesting here that all these other people have gotten one verse. Husband, one verse. Wife, one verse. All the rest, one verse. But here, the employees get four verses. Slaves, four verses. Now, why? Well, it may be that there are more slaves in that church than employers or than slave owners. Maybe that remember Philemon was in that church. Philemon and his runaway slave Onesimus were in that church before Onesimus ran away. And the slaves may have presumed upon that fellowship in the church. Do you ever notice that in the church when people work for a person in the same church? That can be a little bit testy out on the job. I got a summer job back in 68 or 9, and for summer. At one time, I didn't get paid in the summertime. And you're there for 9 months, and after that, sink or swim during the summertime. Well, I got a job, and with a friend, good friend, and he said, "Let me tell you something. On the job, we're boss and employee." I said, "Okay," and I was. That's where we lived it, and we're good friends. Have been for 30 years, but. He said, that's the way we run things. Okay, fine. And that may have been a problem here, that the slaves in the same church meeting with their slave owner, "Hey, Harry, how you doing?" None of that. No, I think that's what he's saying. Anyway, if they did. But I noticed one more thing here, and that is that Paul did not argue for the abolition of slavery. He urged Christians to behave as Christians in the social structure. He sent Onesimus, remember, back to his slave owner, back to Philemon. And he said, I need him. If you want to send him to me, okay, but he's going back. That's where he belongs. And then Paul encourages slaves in 1 Corinthians 7:21. He says this, "Were you called while a slave? Don't worry about it. But if you are able to become free, then rather do that. He's saying do it if you can. But he's not out there doing that. What he's saying is serve the Lord. Serving the Lord is the most important thing. So he says to them, obey your employer. Obey in all things your employer according to the flesh. And of course, according to the flesh simply means your earthly employers. And God is the master of your spirit. So you have your according to the flesh employers, and you have your spirit employer. So in all situations, in all things, not just in the things you want to do, but in all things, whatever you're told to do, you do. But the Lord is first in your consideration. Place him first. Do it in the right way, he says, as not as eye pleasers, see, not just doing the bare minimum. Do it in the right way. And do it as not as men pleasers, working only when the boss is there. I had employees in the AMP, and they knew, they could tell my walk. When I was walking back to the room, I go back in the back room, and they're all busy working. Now, I knew that wasn't true. And later on, one of the guys told me, said, you shuffle when you walk. We know when you're coming. Well, sometimes that's the way. They were men pleasers. When the boss is watching, I'll work. So, do your best. Also, verses 23 and 24. You work for the Lord. Whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord, not to men. You're not working for them. Now, you don't like that boss? Too bad. You're not even working for him. You're working for the Lord. And you have the responsibility to work for the Lord, to do it right, no matter what. Do it heartily. Means out of your soul. Not just the external things, but from your soul, do it as to the Lord. See, your master's in heaven. You work for him. You might say, well, what did the boss ever do for me? Your boss in heaven did everything for you. And that's why you're where you are, and that's why you're going where you're going, because of that boss. Obey him. And then, verse 24 says, he will reward you, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. I'll tell you, if we get this idea, serve the Lord Christ, I'm working for the Lord, not working for that person, then that will solve a lot of things. And you're going to receive, and that word receive has the idea of receiving in full what is due. The reward, which is the inheritance. See, all believers, everybody here who believes in the Lord, I think that covers all of you, everybody here then has a reward coming from the Lord. That's an inheritance. Inheritance that you get because you believe in the Lord. But there is also, by the way, that's Galatians 3 and Ephesians 1. And there's also a conditional inheritance. If we do what's right, then we receive it. If we don't, we lose it. That's 1 Corinthians 3. So this is the reward which is received as wages for the work done. This inheritance is reserved for you in heaven. 1 Peter 1, 4. And whether we receive it or not, it remains to be seen. We receive it if we deserve it. Tom Constable has a good summary of this section, and I've summarized his summary. It goes like this. Employers, remunerate your employees honestly. Pay them right. Pay them what's right. Masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair. Do it right. James 5:4 tells about this. It says, it sums up God's attitude in this way. Indeed, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back from by fraud, cries out. And the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of armies. You cheat your employees, the God of armies hears it, and the God of armies will fight for them. That's important. So pay your employees properly. And then remember your employer is in heaven. You have an employer too. It's in heaven. Knowing that you also have a master in heaven, the employer is responsible to his master and will give an account, even in this life, but certainly in the next life. Now, conclusion. Tom Constable has a good summary of this section, and I've summarized his summary. And it should be remembered that while all Christians are on the same level in the Lord, there are still spheres in which there is subordination. In Christ, there's no difference between Jew and Greek and bond and free and male and female. That's true. But in the household, the husband is the head of the wife, and the children are to obey. In the church, all are subject to the oversight of scripturally appointed leadership. 1 Thessalonians 5, Hebrews 13, and responsible to the Lord, Ephesians 5. Now, in the state, even though children of God are heavenly citizens, we belong to heaven. We are ambassadors here, but we belong in heaven. And even though that's true, we still have we're subject to the secular authorities. We're subject to the earthly statutes, Romans 13, Titus 3. So, in the workplace, employees are subject to their employers. Each one of us needs to find his or her place in this section, in this whole where we live, and fill it. We fill it by God's grace.